Thank you.
Yeah, is
Can you
should
hear
we
us
check?
now? Natalie, can you? That's great. It sounds like she says thanks. Excellent. So let me introduce Deep T. So Deep T is an assistant professor down the street at Boston University. So I know her as one of the leaders in really understanding computer vision quality. So she's created a lot of evaluation frameworks and data sets and research that really gets into the question of what makes a high quality visual output in images. And she's doing work in a lot of work in video now. She is been working at Runway, which I'm fascinated by because so how many of you are familiar with what Runway does, the startup, right? They're really an impressive video generation company. They have been very focused on real filmmakers. And so I'm quite impressed with the work. So I'm curious to hear her experience in doing computer science with them. But today we have a treat because she has talk about a topic that's a little closer to what we do in the lab. She's been looking at the representations inside diffusion models. So I'm very much looking forward to it. So welcome. Welcome, BP.
Thank you. Would you prefer I stand
Either
or
way, whatever's comfortable.
okay?
Yes.
Like, yeah, thanks for the kind introduction. I've been such a big fan of this lab and David's work for a very long time. So, this is very special that I get to like be here and share what my students and I have been working on. So I've been I joined BU last summer. So up until then, I spent about 6 years at Facebook AI Research and then an year as a researcher at Runway. So I can tell a lot of interesting stories in like both places. But yeah, like the focus of this talk is very heavily on understanding what is packed within the diffusion models. So that's been the key question that sort of like that drove some of the works that I'll talk about today. So just to set the stage, we know this, like I should generated video. A few years ago, I used to start my talk saying that video data is everywhere. Now that's old. It's generated video. That's everywhere. Generative media is everywhere. So it is so consuming at this point that it begs us to take a step back and just think through how we've gotten here. And it hasn't been that long. And this is a very nice video that that I credit Runway for making it. Just it shows how quick the progression has been in the world of like generative image and video models. So this is where we were in 2021. And that was the state of the art. And 2022 is where style transfer for videos in sort of real time happened. And this is again like this is still outdated because I only have it till like 2024, I think. And just the photorealism, the visual quality, the camera angles, and the amount of control that we can offer to users has just increased significantly. And the axis of time has only been like just a year or a couple of years. So that's amazing. That's brilliant. How did we get here? We've not gotten here in just like one big leap. It was a series of
Hello.
hey. It was a series of really powerful things like coming together that helped us get here. So one is data, just like the availability of billions of publicly available videos and rich captions and audio and all of the metadata that's associated with them, that played a very significant like role. There has been an in a step improvement in the kind of models that we could leverage. So we were in the world of like variational autoencoders and GANs a few years ago, but then slowly like moved made our way towards like using autoregressive models, not just for text but also for image and video generation, and then also like diffusion. So these are like some of the many like tools and techniques that slowly evolved, and all of these, and along with compute, so these three came together very nicely in this particular moment in time, and that's how like we are where we are right now. So that's brilliant. And there are like models being released every week, every day, with like new phenomenal like changes. It is very, very impressive. Again, like the some these are some of my like favorite generations from Runway's Gen 3 Alpha, I think. Just the ability to get the interplay of like fog trees, the interaction of the lights, some of the shadows over here, and just the photorealism of the bubble gum. That sort of drove this inquisitiveness more and more as to like how is this model like getting these things so right? What is it learning? How is it learning? So that sort of is the key question that you'll see throughout this talk. And we'll talk about one particular tool that we've leveraged to understand this, and like different applications that sort of emerged out of this particular tool. So the key question is like, how is this information being packed, and what information is being packed? I don't need to introduce like why it's important to do model understanding to this particular group. But again, like the two tools that are very popular in the literature is maybe like train, use them as representation learners, linear probe, add a bunch of like layers, see how they perform on different tasks, and that's sort of a proxy to understand what is the kind of information that is packed in like in these models. So that's one way. The other way is building tools that explain what's happening, and these because these are black box in nature, the kind of models we are talking about, the tools that we'll talk about, or I'll talk about here, are would be post hoc explanations. So the model is already trained, and we are trying to probe it to understand again what's packed in like different layers and different architectures. It helps us understand, and then it helps us design better algorithms. Yes.
These prepared questions.
Yeah, go for it.
So in the previous slide, there were like these two sets of model understanding methods. I understand the second one, which is post-training, use a model as a black box, have an external tool. The first one, is that during training you want to learn, or is it like a post-training tool?
Good point. I think here, the way we've learned, or typically, what I had in mind here is post training. So you have a pre-trained model. You want to understand, like how good this particular representation that this model has learned, how good this is for task A or task B. Some features could be good for like classification, but struggle with segmentation because it's more granular, it's more fine-grained. So that's what I was like going for. But you're right that we can do this on the go as well. Yeah, but like post hoc both. Yeah. So model understanding, there are like convolution networks, for instance. They have we've looked at how to like visualize different layers. There is you can either visualize the con filters themselves, you can visualize the output. That's one way of understanding what these models are learning. When it comes to like transformers, there are some simpler tools like visualizing CLS token, visualizing different attention heads, attention maps, as a way to again like see what is the granularity of the visual information that's being packed. When it comes to the focus here is diffusion models, particularly. There are two key challenges that we had to handle, and there might be more, but I'll focus on two. One is it's sequential in nature. When you're talking about convolution, it's a standalone, like the model is trained. There is no unrolling in time that is happening. That is a scenario when it comes to diffusion. It's trained iteratively. The inference is also iterative in nature. So where do you slice, and which slice in time makes the most sense to interpret? So that was the first question that we wanted to understand. And again, the second question was, there is this unrolling. That's again not new. We've seen RNNs that do this, but again, the visual information, the visual signal that's being processed is very different because of the amount of noise, because of like different noise schedulers, because of a lot of other side parameters that influence this choice. So given this, again, like which slice in the noise scheduling timeline should we sample, and how does that make a difference in like what we understand about the model? So these two were the primary challenges when you compare it with like standalone convolution or like transformers, and really digging deep into like the visual representations that are being learned. So we've again, the goal is study the semantic info. Yes.
In the previous slide, when you were mentioning about trying to find what slice to interpret, I mean, I guess ideally it would be good to look at every slice, but that would be very noisy too. So, like, what are like the attributes or parameters that you consider to actually?
Yeah, I have two more slides. this is again like this. People have been trying to study this. This is not we're not the first to like look into interpreting diffusion models, but we are using a tool that is more popular in the language in the LLM world, I think is more recently being borrowed into the VLM and the visual world. It's which is like K-sparse autoencoders. Autoencoders are our friends. We use it for everything right now. So, just to like you pass a signal, image, video, text, it compresses it. So the power is in an undercomplete feature space because the one big motivation for us to use like encoders, autoencoders, is to compress the visual signal from a very high dimensional space to an undercomplete, like a lower dimensional feature space, feed it to whatever application that we want to feature. Sparse autoencoder is the opposite. In that, you want the hidden feature representation or like this feature space to be a very sparse and overcomplete in nature. The motivation behind building a sparse dictionary is that ideally, if the space is large enough, maybe we can decompose this complex mixture of visual signals into separate individual signals. Yes.
I mean, generally, though it can be under com not under complete, over com complete, but like you don't have to go big always. I mean, what I mean by it is basically you take the embedding, the original embedding, and are you like, is the latent dimension size of your sparse autoencoder bigger than your original space?
In our experiments, yes, it is.
Do you think is it feasible that it can be also smaller and sparse?
It depends on the input feature.
Features.
It dep not the number, also the complexity of the input features that we are feeding. It is.
It's a trend of models that are trained on the internet, so
Yeah.
you might not know.
if yeah, the input itself doesn't have sufficient diversity in the signal, sufficient complexity, then what you're saying is maybe an overcomplete set may not be necessary, but the kind of, like, as you mentioned, like, it's usually trained on like larger LLMs, or the roots of sparse autoencoders or sparse dictionary, like, goes back to like I think 80s or 90s, where again, like, the motivation was to decompose an image signal into ideally linear representation of these, like, the dictionary entries.
But now the dictionary is either.
So the hypothesis of, like, one of the earlier works which introduced k-sparse autoencoders to probe into, like, LLMs, was again, like, overcomplete, building an overcomplete feature space and enforcing sparsity might encourage learning of these monosemantic concepts. So the motivation is all of these visual features are highly polysemantic in nature. So a single, like, representation has mixtures of different semantic information, and the goal is to split that into monosemantic representations. And k-sparse autoencoders are one way that folks are being folks are exploring to achieve this.
Did you use the granular implementation case for some purpose? And generally, it comes with like you can apply like sparsity, L1 sparsity penalty as well as there's some like fancy loss functions.
Yeah, no, we didn't use L1 sparse because it the training does not it's harder to train. So we use so the it's called K sparse autoencoder because you retain the top K highest activation, like, units, and zero out the rest. So that's how the sparsity is introduced instead of the
In my
L1.
experience, the like you end up with a lot of dead neurons.
Yes. And there's a lot of work on, like, how to handle dead neurons, and, like, we've included all of that to again, the goal is to ensure that whatever the model is learning is meaningful and doesn't end up with, like, dead neurons, that, as you said. So at a high level, diffusion features, again, like, they have complex semantic information in it. So we treat them as polysemantic in nature, feed them to an encoder. And again, like, depends on, like, different features, like the hidden layer representation should be large enough. And the hope is that this will break down. This is, like, an ideal hope to break down into, like, nice monosemantic representations. In addition to, like, the K retaining the top K and setting the rest to zero, I mean, it's an autoencoder, so you also have the reconstruction loss. So the output ends up being polysemantic, but what we are interested in is these, like, hidden representations. Any questions? So what we did is, like, we use K sparse autoencoders as a tool and trained it on diffusion feature representations extracted from different image data sets. So looked into fine-grained image data sets such as, like, pets and aircrafts, like, bunch of, like, image fine-grained data sets, and also, like, coarser-grained data sets, because we're really curious as to what are the patterns that these the hidden layer is latching on to. What is it learning? Is there some systematic information that can be that gets revealed? So what we found is, and again, like, I'll go through, like, different layers and different time steps, but picking the correct layer matters. Like, in the ideal, in, like, one of the layers, we were able to see the specific breeds of different animals surfacing pretty nicely. And there was another layers features where the breeds of dogs were getting mixed up, but dogs were being like one of the neurons was like firing up the most when every time it sees
Oh, no, I say
the one of the hidden unit. The activation of that would be like high, which for the diffusion features. So we looked at stable diffusion 1.5, 2.1, and flux.
layer in flux.
So get to that. Just I think that's the first question. So what flavors of visual information is being captured in different layers? So that was the first question. I'm using unit style architecture, but DIT, flux, like any, even if it's transformer based, it's just a sequence of like blocks of different like resolutions. So the notation here corresponds to unit, but it did apply to like other architectures as well. So we did see that around the bottleneck, which is the one with the least amount or like most compact visual representation, the features are like the we were looking at top n neurons that were firing up to get like a more generalized understanding. It was very coarse grain. There was no it was just I think looking at objects which are in similar poses doesn't matter if they're like cats, dogs, just pose. So our understanding here was the resolution is so low that it's looking the information that is packed is very coarse grained in nature. One level up, the features were getting more relatively like more granular than the below one. So it started to group dogs and cats into different like so different neurons were like firing up for different animals. So this was the magic layer, upfeed one, which corresponds to I think block 14 in DIT and a similar like middle-ish plus block in flux. That's where
So this is ST1.4 or
this is 1.4. And upfeed one, I don't think I have this in the slides, but we have it in the paper that the same applied to like 2.1 and DIT. Yeah, DIT and like flux. But this particular one is for 1.4.
can I clarify a question?
Yes. Yeah.
So did is this a model that you trained from scratch on new data, or this is the pre-trained model that you're analyzing?
Yeah, I should have clarified. So this is pre-trained set of models like stable diffusion, flux, or DIT. All we did was extract features of these images from these respective like layers.
These images are from.
These images belong to particular image data sets, so fine-grained image data sets. So just pass the image, no training, just and directly extract the features. So once the model is trained, we can still like pass the image as the input. Ideally, it can go through the whole process, but you can sample a particular like
Are you noising the image?
we do noise the image as it goes through like the different time steps.
I don't know about it, but like, is the underlying architecture of ST unit?
It is unique, yes.
But it has like every of these unit blocks is actually a transformer.
Not in stable diffusion in DI.
Is it? It's, you know, with attention. It's good.
There are many variants of that.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't know about 1.4, but like STXL, the unit, like the individual blocks, consist of multiple what people call transformer blocks, with attention and MLP, and then there are also cross-attention layers within. So makes sense that this is very similar to flex.
Did you notice differences in reconstruction between like the fine-grained the problem here.
We didn't train it, so we just like did one forward pass extracted just for feature extraction.
I guess where did you get the SAEs?
Oh, so you're talking about the SAEs of the reconstruction loss of the SAE. Let me double check that. I don't think there was a pattern for different features, but yeah, I can check.
Good question. So when you talk about like, yeah, these features are, I mean, they're fine grained, they're coarse grained. Is it like a manual interpretation or your manual?
Yeah, I'll get to that. So this a particular like layer was where we were able to see very nice like separation of like when we would for the particular KSAE, if a particular breed was like image a dog of a particular breed was like sent, then consistently the same neuron was getting like activated, and then the signal got diluted as we went higher up. And again, like the theory, which I think a couple of others have also recently found, is that now the alignment is more with the diffusion loss. So here there is like nice semantic information that is being captured, but again, as we traverse like deeper, then it gets more aligned with the actual loss that we are using. So the summary here is different layers to capture information of different granularity. But the technique that we used was not was like visual inspection. We used like a VLM to like send all of these images and like say what is the common pattern that's emerging. So it is okay, but it's still like qualitative. We wanted to make this more concrete or more quantitative, so we resorted to the sec the so going back, we talked about two ways of like interpreting the model. One is just using it as representation learners, and the other is like post hoc. We treated KSE as like post hoc way of explaining. So just to like validate that we were not, I don't know, overfitting our assumptions by visualizing this, we trained like a simple like classifier on like different features.
Is diffusion features now the SAE decomposed thing, or is it usually the, intermediate design of the
It's,
image?
yeah, I should have clarified. It's directly these. So just like pass the image, get the features from this particular layer, and use it to train like a simple like learner. So three data sets. I font should could have been bigger. So the purple and the green correspond to finer grained image data sets. So these are so the pipeline was extract images from these data sets, train a particular do a train val split and report accuracy on like the test split. So you do see that for the finer grain, again consistent with our KSE observations, upfeed one was the block that was performing significantly better than the other layers. For the coarse grained, there wasn't it didn't make much of a difference. It could also be because of the choice of the data set, because Caltech, I mean, I think if you the classes are so nicely separated in this particular data set that very coarse visual signal is enough to do a good classification task. I don't have it in this slide, but we again like tried it on ImageNet and other like what we think as like more coarser feature classes, and it was consistent that the performance, particularly for finer grain data sets, was better for upfeed one. For coarse grained, the deltas weren't that high.
Does it make any sense to use the encoder output instead of, I mean, use all the outputs that you've used either from the bottom or the decoder layers?
Can you repeat?
Oh, she's not, this is not an SAE at all.
No. So I'm talking about the net encoder output. So basically, you're taking the output from either the bottom layer or the upsampling layers of the unit. You can also do the same thing from the downsample.
From the
So
downsample.
you're going down While you were going down and take it.
I think we tried that. Yeah, I think that, yeah, we did try that.
Are you looking at the outputs of the blocks or at like the thing that's making people would refer to as residual sleep?
We were using the residual outputs.
So the x plus f of x.
Yes.
Okay.
So something that we mentioned earlier, like for Caltech and ImageNet and other data sets, UpFit one overall does better, but the deltas weren't that high. Yes.
So it's x plus f of x makes sense, but you're doing it in the blocks. Do you also take the unit residual also? So
So you mean like
the
the
skip.
residual that comes from
If it does, then you're automatically considering the decoded ones.
I should check. I think we do. I will check.
The units are super tricky. Of these connections.
I will get back. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So the summary was that different layers have different contribution, and the granularity of the information varies from like coarse to fine grained, and then again like sort of becomes coarse and aligns with the final objective. So the second question that we wanted to study was again like what time step to sample on. Again, like this is during the just the notation, like we start with like a clean image and progressively add noise. So that's sort of like the time axis that we were looking at. So it makes sense to like the cleanest latent or the image with like least amount of noise should do better. And my hope was that this plot will like fall through like immediately, like even at like t equal to like at 50, I thought there will be like a drop
Are you adding noise now along the x-axis?
along. So the x-axis is the time step. So yeah, as so t equal to 0, clean image 200 has more. T equal to 1000, I don't have it here, is like just completely noise. So one thing that we observed again, blue and green are fine grained. The trend is sharper. The drop is sharper with the amount of noise for finer grained data sets. But coarse grained, there is a slight boost in the performance, and we've seen this, and there was like another recent paper that also had this, which and was again like not something that we were expecting. And this was something that we observed across like a couple of other data sets. It was not an artifact of like Caltech. Hypothesis is maybe like some noise, like a regularizer. But again, like
I'm still confused about the setup, honestly. Like, if you take an image, you add some noise, right? But now to get representations, you need to do a unit forward pass, and that one also receives as an input the text prompt, right?
So all of these, like because we wanted to study only the visual like part, the text prompt was empty.
Got it. And you're not using some sophisticated, like, diffusion inversion to get the noise that leads to the exact same image, but just feature selector.
Yeah, just like standalone like feature extraction and studying these features. No, yeah.
So you're not in the forward pass at all. Just the
No, not they are, but the text from this end.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, you cannot get the new
no, there's
representation.
those impact.
Okay. So another question we wanted to study is this just like a we started off with stable diffusion variance, and yes.
So since you're taking active instance from the residual connection, you're right, like what you expect is the cleanup image would have most information. But another question to ask is, at what point did the diffusion model really start generating this image? It's because it's recursive, which is one of the problems you explained. So you are technically giving it the full decoded image it already generated in the final step. So it already has the image in there. It just has to denoise a little bit. And now, since you're taking the residual output, the information coming from your input is playing the key role at giving you the features. I don't know if that made sense. Your input is already an image. And the features that you're collecting is the residual plus whatever your diffusion models layers have given you. So the residual already has the information about your image, right? Another question is, at what layers or time steps did this part of the actual diffusion model really give semantic information for you?
Is the question because maybe we are like there is like a residual from the down pass that signal plus the pure upsample signal. So are you talking about the entanglement between the two or?
I wouldn't assume that X0 is where the diffusion model has the most rich features, right? Because its job is to just remove that tiny bit noise it has remaining. And somewhere around the mid time steps is when it's actually trying to generate the image. So that might be the most powerful time step. When I think about when is the diffusion model actually generating versus when are its activations rich?
I see.
Right, activations are rich at the final time step because the input is already a very well-structured image. Maybe around like 400 or 300 is when the diffusion model actually starts to dream this new image that it's generating. So I expect that to be like the most rich features. I don't know if
I
that's
see.
something you looked into.
We did this only with like building this small classifier on top, and for different data sets, like the performance did drop off after 200.
So
Maybe.
if you took the signal out from the before it even goes to the residual and run again the classifiers, would you see a different shape in your plot? If
I
you do that,
want to run that and answer that question because yeah, it's but yeah, I think that is a more controlled way of studying the
right?
contribution.
Yeah, like it'll be very nice if you could see that a different shape comes up. I don't know what that answers, but that'll be nice.
Makes sense. We studied, as I mentioned, like different architectures. There are like detailed results numbers in the paper, but something that what I'm showing here is for this particular image, we looked at the features, extracted features, and like constructed like BCA feature maps. So I identified like top three principal components and color coded them as RGB just for reference. And we found that just overall, there is more primarily because of like the underlying convolution versus like transformer and like based differences. There is more spatially localized information in the SD 1.4 style like architecture compared to like DIT. And this also kind of translated to the classification like performances or also the per when we did the k-sparse autoencoder and like visualization across like different blocks, the signal was cleaner for like unit-based architecture compared to like DIT.
These images, what is the thing that should catch our eye throughout this conclusion? Because I don't really see it.
So, what at least like our or my interpretation here is there are we were able to separate out one principal component which was which was localizing this particular like person, and one other like
What
principle,
segmentation?
something that such clean separation is was not something that we were able to achieve with like DID based features was our
Did you go into beta approximately the idea?
it we did, and
Well,
it gets aligned with the pre-training objective and the signal gets lost.
that's like 50 or something bucks, right? Max model.
So this is with like the DIT model, and it had like 28, this particular model that we used. Flux, we don't have this visualization
But
for
it's fine.
flux. Yeah.
Okay, got it.
We have flux results in the paper, and we did sample like the middle and upper middle blocks.
So in Flux, like I would have had something smart to say because, like in Flux, around block 16 or 17, you get some high norm activations, like super duper high
I
norm.
see.
So they would definitely probably mess up with yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Just going back to the previous slide. So, generally still, new in this visual side, but how, like, kind of repeating the question, like, how exactly are you able to recognize that the previous one would, the unit one is spatially localized versus DIT's information release route, for example, because in block 12, like I noticed that it is also still, I don't know, spatially. So,
Yeah,
see a thing.
yeah, I think so. I see your point. I think we, we were trying to align with the image, and again, there could like we wanted the person, like the semantic object, person to be separated out by compared to like the semantic object of the car. So again, like that is sort of what drove our like visualization, that maybe the separation is cleaner when we are using like upfit one off unit compared to like the DIT based. Hypothesis here is because like there is like attention and everything attends to everything, so maybe the that has an impact on like how much like the spatially localized information that's being packed in these features.
And speaking of spatially localized, like I understand with the motivation of like the object segmentation itself. But is like background and foreground also considered a thing? Again, just basically referring to the block as like a spatial. So.
I think that is like a coarser segmentation of the scene is foreground and background, and if we get like more finer grain, then we want like objects. But yeah, I see your point that block 12 doesn't look as bad. But the murkiness in like the signal between like the person and the car was what we were like looking for.
Is DIT text conditioned or is
We set we can give
it?
text conditioning, but we set it to like an empty prompt. Was that the
Is
question?
it even possible to condition DIT? I don't know because the last time I remember DIT was this
We
naive architecture. Or maybe there's a new DIT, but
I will check. I like for the stable diffusion models, at least like we explicitly set everything to like an empty prompt. Yeah.
So assuming that if DIT cannot be text conditioned, maybe that's also possibly a reason why you see this segmentation not happen.
There is no external like
Right.
signal
So maybe the
during
model
training.
doesn't know what a person is and what a car is.
Yeah, it was trained on ImageNet data, so
Yeah.
it should have some semantic understanding.
It's just an additional supervision.
Yeah. But like vision transformers in general don't have text conditioning.
They don't know.
Okay. I do want to be mindful
Yeah,
of time, like when.
Should we let her move along faster? Because I think that she's probably about 10% through the talk. And we're about 90% through the time. So let's let her, yeah.
How much time do you have? It's
We can run over a bit.
okay,
So yeah.
10 minutes just for me. Okay, I'll try to do that. So we studied different layers, time steps, and architectures, like things that I did not cover. And again, like these were the students who did all the work. Again, like does the feature or the certain features perform well for certain other tasks? Visual reasoning, that was like something that we're very interested in. Like, can we use these features to understand certain like tasks where current like CLIP and other models like seem to struggle? And again, we did study like what happens if we like zero or like don't send any external conditioning and how those representations are different. So everything is in the paper. So the next question that we wanted to study was, so this was one way of interpreting like diffusion features and the semantic information in it. Are there other ways to do this? And this again like ties back to our interest in like being able to offer more control to the users while generating an image. So something that we did is that if we are learning monosemantic features using k-sparse autoencoders, can I systematically like steer the image away from a particular monosemantic concept? So there's a nude image, and the monosemantic concept that I'm interested in like removing or steering it away from is nudity. Can do that for different artistic styles, photographic styles of or object attributes. So this the approach is again like was very straightforward. This is our like standard pipeline, like start with like a noisy image, give a prompt, and then like the model like infers and generates the image. What we did on the side was we trained like a k-sparse autoencoder. So just for now, like assume we have like a pre-trained k-sparse autoencoder. I'll get to how we train it in like a couple of slides. So given this trained sparse autoencoder, and this is trained on a bunch of text prompts only, no visual signal. Once this is trained, we extract the text representation of a particular concept we want to steer. Identify the again like extract the intermediate representation from it. If you want to steer away, then we multiply it with a particular like steering strength, and just combine it with the feature representation, the text representation of the original prompt. And this was a simple addition between the two representations. And we found that this simple trick was enough for us to somehow not just isolate this semantic concept, but also squash that from the overall like representation. So use that in the diffusion like denoising process, and we were able to like generate images which are again like that particular concept was removed. And this was trained again only on like pure like text representation. Can be trained if the goal is to steer away from like a bunch of unsafe concepts, then we that is what those were the set of prompts we used for pre-training it. If the goal was like photographic styles or artistic styles, then there was like this other sparse autoencoder we trained on like everything else, like anything else, and trained it once, and we were able to use it to steer any concept of choice. So a couple of quick examples, and if you want to steer something towards a concept, then like the steering strength had to be like higher. Again, the concept that we wanted to steer it towards was make the style like more minimalistic. And again, like if So I think, yeah, so magnify
Do
was
you
a
add these features across the entire spatial grid, or do you?
Only at like a particular, what do you mean by the entire
So
one?
that it's like a width and a height.
What's that? So it
This is
is
only text
only
empty.
text.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So the previous result was on like Stable Diffusion 1.4, and this was on Flux again. Just wanted to see if this is generalizable across like different architectures. And because KSAE was trained in a standalone fashion, that was architecture agnostic. So you can train it once and use it on like any model, any diffusion architecture of your choice. So this was for like concept removal. So nudity and violence were the examples. Does compete well with other like state-of-the-art methods. In this particular case, we wanted to change the sort of like the environment or the style. One surprising, a pleasantly surprising thing was we wanted to study, because the model was trained on like prompts which are like reasonably well formed. How resilient would these monosemantic features that we learn, how resilient would they be to like a prompt which has like some adversarial noise or some in it? And we did, it's a lot of numbers, large table, but we did find that it does compete reasonably well across like different data sets. Particularly surprising was there were models trained or like built with a focus on like making sure that they are more resilient to like adversarial attacks. But that was not the intention, but this was a very nice like side effect. It shows that the monosemantic features that are being learned are quite resilient, reasonably like separable in terms of like I think the concept nudity or the concept of a particular photographic style is nicely captured, and that makes it more more reliable. So yeah, this was a work led by Dahe, my student, and the nice property of this was it was giving us more insight into like how the semantic information is packed in the text encoders, and we were able to use it to nicely control the generations. And I mentioned this, we trained it only once, and we were able to use it across like different models. So that was again like a nice property.
Because they all use the same text encoder, right?
Yeah, so
What's the difference?
that's a dependency. So if I think STXL Turbo, it has like two text encoders. So as long as the text encoder is the same, then you can use it. So one thing that you'd see, I mean, it's all it does look on the surface like a nice change in the scenery, but especially like the bench is different, and like the scenery is also like there is a house that came up here that was not there in this particular scene. So this is not it is doing a reasonable job, but there are mistakes that our model is making, and multiple reasons we only used text feature representations, and that's not enough. That's not enough of a signal. This is a complex model, like there is a lot of like interactions. And these are global features. But we want to see if we can use both visual and text and text features and be able to steer the image more locally so that yeah, the bench remains the same essentially. So whatever is in the input, it should stay intact in the output. And I mean, since we worked on this, there are I think at least 10 other papers which do this with very nice results. But yeah, want to see if I think if we can understand how if there is any localization of information within KSAEs, maybe that could again like help us train like a more resilient like method. What something that the reason why we resorted to text embeddings was that steering only with visual embeddings was changing too many things in the scene. So which meant that the features were not, so in the first work, we did see that there are like granular, certain part, one layer was like more granular than the other. But when it came to steering, it wasn't as effective because it was changing too many things when we were trying to just remove nudity, for instance, and it would like, add a bunch more things that we didn't want. So we really want to understand why this was happening. Is it limited by the capacity of the sparse autoencoder? Is it not over complete enough? Or just one layer of sparse autoencoder is not enough because now people are using like multi-layer sparse autoencoders. We lose interpretability there if you start adding layers, but yeah. Really interested to understand why the superposition of like different features is happening. Something that I'm interested in, just because the features seemed robust, even when the prompts had like adversarial prompts had adversarial inputs, was like, is there like a common pattern that emerges in these activation like units with or without these, when it's jailbreaked, when it's not? So if so, we can like build tools to figure out, okay, there is like maybe there is an attempt of jailbreaking that's happening, or just avoid that from happening. So this is again like not limited to diffusion or generation. It's more aligned with like language only models, but something that we're interested in and are looking at. So if anyone has any thoughts or ideas or like feedback, love to like hear. So this talk was primarily about just glorifying sparse autoencoders. They were very helpful as a tool to understand different like visual feature granularity, and they also helped us offer more control to the user with caveats. But yeah, I think it did do a reasonable job in like maintaining the semantic information. So that's all I got. And yeah, any more questions?
Thank you. Let's take just a couple questions, and then we'll take a little break, and then also if people want to talk, I want to make sure there's some time to talk one-on-one deeply for a couple folks. But if there's any clarifying questions or any other long questions for the talk. I know we asked a lot during the talk. Right? Yes, go ahead.
You showed this clip essay that also edited flux circuits.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a new finding because flux's main text encoding is T5.
Oh, this we used, so for flux we use whatever text encoders.
Oh.
Yeah, I should
so flux also has clip in it.
So yeah, for flux and SDX Excel
yeah.
has two text encoders, so we use two. I should have clarified. So, whatever is the underlying text encoder, the KSE has to be trained on it.
On both of them.
On both. If it uses both, then it uses both. I think there is an ablation in the paper where we steer only one and not the other. Yeah, but I think in most of the results that I have here, like both are being used.
You talked a lot about monosynthesity, but like, how do you know that the features are actually monosemantic? Like, are you selecting a single feature here, or?
So in this particular case, like, so that's a good question. Like one way, that was exactly the question, like, in the first paper, which sort of helped us build towards this one, the first work that I talked about, we were using VLM like tagging and like building adding a bunch of layers, but that still was not validating that these features were monosemantic, which was sort of like.
In the first work, you didn't steer the generation at all.
Right. So the steering was our way to like really understand if these are like truly monosemantic, because if I give the just like a concept of nudity. And if the model, the assumption is this is a monosemantic concept, and if the model's one of the internal unit has really captured that monosemantic concept, then steering only that should retain as much as of, should only change this concept and retain everything else. So that was sort of a proof of concept that led to this. And they are roughly monosemantic, but again, like these changes means that there is some leakage that is happening, which is of interest to explore.
That could just be diffusion.
You know, yeah.
If you have a bigger model, maybe flux something, future flux, 30 billion model, maybe it'll fix it.
Yeah.
Like the RDS changes are interesting, and this you can just do with prompting, right? Like you can be like a photo of a tree with a bench and snow.
I think it's when it comes to like some of the applications that I've seen at Runway are like user uploads an image and says now change my my shirt or my hair color and then now add glasses. So they want to retain the initial image and make edits to it. In that case, you can't like.
Except for that, people will use diffusion inversion and plus prompting.
Yeah, that diffusion inversion is one technique. There could be other techniques, and I think this
it's hard to control.
Steering and sliding are one more.
Steering.
Do you think like part of the reason steering on the image domain is not really as nice is because it's just more difficult to do it correctly? I mean, you know, steering on the front, you're just adding to one vector. You don't, and the model figures out, you know, what which spatial locations to update mm-hmm. and so on. But if you would steer on the visual domain, you would have to do this part.
We can you can like pick a layer, pick a time step and do this. But my hypothesis is these are not as monosemantic. So compared to text-only features and visual-only features, this, at least our experiments, it did show that text features were, we were able to break them down into semantic, monosemantic concepts better. Again, like other networks, multi-layer KSAs which folks are using, those could be like ways to get achieve this.
Thank you, Diffie.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks.
Yeah, that's the truth.